future. In what felt now like her other life, she would have been in charge of those decorations. The gym was full of kids in scarlet satin gowns, their faces scrubbed and shiny, their eyes bright with promise. Lauren wanted to be down there with her friends, a laughing, teasing girl again. The longing was so sharp she almost stumbled. Tonight would be the grad night party. She'd waited years to attend. Angie took her arm, led her up the bleachers to a seat in the middle. The three of them sat close together, tucked in amidst all the other friends and family of the graduating class. Lauren found David. He stood out from the crowd and melted into it at the same time. He wasn't even looking up here. He was living the moment, loving it. It pissed Lauren off that he should be down there, a boy with his whole life ahead of him while she was here, stuck in the audience, a pregnant girl-woman who'd lost so much. As quickly as the anger blossomed, it faded, leaving her with the sad longing she'd felt all day. The noise blurred into one loud, pulsating roar. Lauren balled her hands, hung onto her composure by the thinnest thread. She couldn't help looking for her mother, even though she knew Mom wouldn't be here. Hell, she would have missed it if Lauren were graduating. Still, she had this tiny, aching hope that one day her mother would come back, that Lauren would look up one day and see her. Angie put an arm around Lauren, pulled her close. The music started. Lauren leaned forward. Below, the kids ran for their seats. One by one, the graduates of Fircrest Academy walked across the stage, took their diplomas from the principal, and moved their tassel from one side to the other. "David Ryerson Haynes," the principal said. The applause was thunderous. The kids cheered for him, screamed his name. Lauren's voice was lost in the crowd. He walked across the stage as if he owned it. When he was back in his seat, Lauren relaxed. She didn't tense up again until they reached the R's. "Dan Ransberg, Michael Elliott Relker, Sarah Jane Rehnquist," Lauren leaned forward, "Thomas Adams Robards." She sat back, trying not to be disappointed. She'd known they wouldn't call her name. After all, she'd graduated last semester, but still, she'd hoped. She'd worked so hard for so many years. It didn't seem right that now she sat up here while her friends were down there. "It's just a ceremony," Angie whispered, leaning close. "You're a high school graduate, too." Lauren couldn't help feeling sorry for herself. "I wanted it so much," she said. "The cap and gown, the applause. I used to dream I'd be class speaker." She laughed bitterly. "Instead, I'm the class joke." Angie looked at her. There was a heavy sadness in her eyes. "I wish I could make everything okay. But some dreams just pass us by. It's the way life is." "I know. I just want." Lauren nodded. That was as good an answer as any. She leaned against Angie and held her hand as the names droned on. The ceremony lasted another 45 minutes, and then it was over. The three of them melted into the laughing, talking crowd and moved to the football field, where huge tents had been set up to hold off the rain. So many cameras flashed that it looked like the paparazzi had arrived. Dozens of friends came up to Lauren, waving at her, welcoming her back. But she saw the way they wouldn't look at her stomach, and the poor Lauren in their eyes, and it made her feel stupid all over again. "There he is," Angie said at last. Lauren stood on her toes. There he was, standing with his parents. She let go of Angie's hand and hurried through the crowd. When David saw her, his smile faded for a split second. Only that, and then he was smiling again, but she'd seen it. And she knew. He wanted to be with his friends tonight. Wanted to do what the Fircrest grads always did on this night. Go down to the beach, sit around a bonfire, and drink beer and laugh about their years together. He didn't want to sit quietly with his whale of a girlfriend and listen to her litany of aches and pains. She stumbled to a stop in front of him. "Hey," he said, bending down to kiss her. She kissed him too long, too hard, clung to him, then finally forced herself to draw back. Mrs. Haynes was looking at her with understanding. "Hello, Lauren."
"Angie, Conlon."
For the next few minutes, they stood there, talking about nothing. When the conversation fell into an awkward pause, David said to her, "You want to come to the beach after this?"
"No."
She found it hard to say the word. His relief was obvious, but he said, "Are you sure?" She couldn't even blame him. She'd looked forward to grad night for years. It was the talk of Firrcrest. It just hurt.
"I'm sure."
They talked for a few more minutes, then headed for the car. It wasn't until later, when they were pulling into the driveway, that she realized that no one had taken a picture of her and David. All their years together, and there would be no senior grad day photograph. At the house, Lauren got out of the car and went to her room. She thought she heard Angie and Conlon talking to her, but there was a white noise in her head, so she couldn't be sure. Maybe they were talking to each other. She sat on the bed, staring at the bedpost for a long time, remembering. When she couldn't stand it anymore, she went downstairs and walked out to the porch. The rain had stopped, leaving a scrubbed robin's egg blue sky behind. She stood at the railing. There, down on the beach below, was a bonfire. Smoke puffed into the air. It probably wasn't the senior party. Certainly it wasn't. And yet, she wondered if she could lumber down the steps to the beach and walk all that way across sand. "Hey, you." Angie came up behind Lauren, put a heavy woolen blanket around her shoulders. "You're freezing."
"Am I?"
"Yes." She turned around, saw Angie's worried face. "Oh," Lauren sighed shakily. Then she burst into tears. Angie stood there forever, holding her, stroking her hair. When Lauren finally drew back, shuddering, she saw that Angie had tears in her eyes, too. "Is it contagious?" she asked, trying to smile.
"It's just, you're still a little girl sometimes."
"I take it David is going to the grad night party alone?"
"Not alone, just not with me."
"You could have gone."
"I don't belong there anymore."
She pulled free and went to the porch swing and sat down. She wanted to tell Angie that lately it felt as if she didn't belong anywhere. She loved this house, this family. But once the baby was born, Lauren wouldn't belong here anymore. What had the lawyer said to her? A baby needs one mother. Angie sat down beside her. Together they stared down the tangle of overgrown yard to the sandy beach below.
"What happens after?"
Lauren asked, leaning forward. She was careful not to look at Angie.
"Where will I go?"
She heard the fissure in her voice. There was no way she could sound strong.
"You'll come back here, to the house. Then, when you're ready, you'll leave.
Con and I bought you an airplane ticket to school, and one to come home for Christmas."
Home.
The word was a dart that pierced deep in her heart. This wouldn't be her home anymore, not once the baby was born. All her life, Lauren had felt alone. Now she knew better. Her mother had been there, and when Mom ran off, Angie stepped in. For these last few months, Lauren had felt as if she finally belonged somewhere. But soon she'd know what truly being alone felt like.
"We don't have to follow someone else's rules, Lauren," Angie said. There was a tinny, desperate edge to her voice.
"We can create whatever family we want."
"My counselor doesn't think I should be here after the baby's born. She thinks that would be too hard on all of us.
It wouldn't be too hard on me, Angie said slowly, drawing back slightly. But you need to do what's best for you.
Yeah, Lauren said. I guess I'll be looking out for myself from now on.
We'll always be here for you.
Lauren thought of the adoption plan they'd come up with, the letters and photographs and consent agreements. It was all designed to keep the two of them at arm's length.
Yeah, Lauren said, knowing it couldn't be true.
Chapter 31. Conlon, Angie, and Lauren sat at the scarred old dining table, playing cards. The music of Angie's youth pounded through the speakers, forcing them to yell at one another. Right now, Madonna was trying to remember how virginity felt.
You guys are in trouble now, Lauren said, taking the trick with the eight of diamonds.
Read 'em and weep. She slapped down a 10 of hearts. Conlon glanced at Angie. Can you stop her? Angie couldn't help grinning.
Nope.
Aw, shit, Conlon said. Lauren's laughter rang above the music. It sounded young and innocent, and at that, Angie felt a catch in her chest. Lauren shot the moon, then got to her feet and did a little victory dance. It was slow and ponderous, given her stomach, but it made them all laugh.
Gee, I think I should go to bed now, Lauren said with a wide-eyed innocence.
Conlon laughed. No way, kiddo. You can't dump us with all those points and then just walk.
Lauren was halfway across the room when the doorbell rang. Before they'd even wondered who it was, the door opened. Mama, Mira, and Livy stood there. Each of them held a big cardboard box. They rushed into the cottage, already talking, and went straight to the kitchen, where they set down the boxes. Angie didn't have to go over there to know what was in the boxes. Food, frozen in Tupperware, ready to be heated at a moment's notice and served. No doubt each of them had been cooking double dinners for a week. New mommies didn't have time to cook. Angie's chest tightened again. She didn't want to go over there and see the evidence of what was coming.
Come on over, she yelled to her sisters and mother. We're playing cards.
Mama walked across the room and snapped off the stereo.
That is not music.
Angie smiled. Some things never changed. Mama had started turning off Angie's music in the late 70s.
How about some poker, Mama?
I hate to take advantage of you all.
Mira and Livy laughed. Livy said to Lauren,
She cheats.
Mama puffed up her narrow chest.
I do not.
Lauren laughed.
I'm sure you would never cheat.
I'm just very lucky, Mama said, pulling up a chair and sitting down.
Before Mira got to the table, Lauren said, I'll be right back. I have to go to the bathroom for about the 50th time today.
I know the feeling, Livy said.
How is she? Mira asked as soon as Lauren left the room.
It's getting close, I think, was Angie's answer.
A silent look was passed around the table. They were all wondering the same thing. Would Lauren be able to give her baby away?
We brought food, Mira said.
Thanks.
Suddenly, the bathroom door cracked open. Lauren ran into the living room and stopped dead. She stood there, looking pale and terrified. Water ran down her legs and puddled on the hardwood floor.
It's starting!
Breathe, Angie said, showing her how.
Ha, ha, ha.
Lauren lurched upright in bed, screaming,
Get it out of me!
She grabbed Angie's sleeve.
I don't want to be pregnant anymore. Make it stop. Oh, God. Oh!
She flopped back onto the pillows, panting hard. Angie wiped Lauren's forehead with a cold, wet rag. You're doing great, honey. Just great. She could tell when the contraction ended. Lauren looked up at her through tired eyes. She looked impossibly, heartbreakingly young. Angie fed her some ice chips.
I can't do it, Lauren whispered in a broken voice. I'm not. Oh!
She was stiffening up, arching in pain. Breathe, honey. Look at me. Look! I'm right here. We're breathing together. She held Lauren's hand. Lauren melted back into the pillows.
It hurts.
She started to cry.
I need drugs.
I'll find some. Angie kissed her forehead, then ran from the room.
Where's our damn doctor?
She raced up and down the white corridor until she found Dr. Mullen. He was the doctor on call tonight. Their regular obstetrician was on vacation.
There you are. Lauren is in pain. She needs medications. I'm afraid...
It's okay, Mrs. Malone. I'll check on her. He motioned for a nurse and headed for Lauren's room. Angie went to the waiting room, which was filled to overflowing. Mira's family, Livy's family, Uncle Francis, Aunt Julia, Conlin and Mama all stood in the tiny area, taking up too much space. Along the other wall, sitting alone in a mustard-colored plastic chair, was David. He looked dazed and scared. God, he was so young. Angie stepped into the room. The crowd turned to her. Everyone started talking at once. Angie waited. When they finally fell silent, she said, I think it's close. Then she crossed the room. David stood up. He was so pale. He appeared almost translucent against the white walls. His blue eyes held the gloss of unshed tears. He moved toward her in jerky, uncertain steps. How is she? Angie touched his forearm, feeling how cold he was. As she looked into his watery eyes, she knew why Lauren loved this boy so much. He was all heart. Someday he would be a good man. She's doing well. Would you like to see her now?
Is it over?
No. I can't. He said it in a whisper. She wondered how long this decision would haunt him. It would leave a mark, she knew, but most of this day would. On all of them.
Tell her I'm here, okay?
My mom is on her way, too.
I will.
They stood there, looking at each other, saying nothing. Angie wished there were words for a time like this. She felt Conlin come up beside her. His big hand curled around her shoulder, squeezed. She leaned into him, looked up.
You ready?
I am. They made their way through the family and back toward the birthing room. Conlin stopped at the nurse's station and picked up some scrubs. The minute they walked into the room, Lauren screamed Angie's name. I'm here, honey. I'm here. She ran to the bedside and took Lauren's hand in hers. Breathe, honey.
It hurts.
It tore Angie up, that kind of pain in Lauren's voice.
Is David here?
She asked, starting to cry again. He's in the waiting room. Do you want me to get him?
No. I'll move!
She arched in pain.
That's it. Push,
Dr. Mullen said. Come on, Lauren. Push hard. Lauren sat up. Angie and Conlin held her upright as she grunted and strained and screamed.
It's a boy, Dr. Mullen said a few minutes later.
Lauren flopped back in bed. The doctor turned to Conlin.
You're the father, right? Would you like to cut the cord?
Conlin didn't move.
Do it, Lauren said tiredly. It's okay.
He moved woodenly forward, took the scissors and snipped the cord. The nurse immediately moved in and took the baby. Angie smiled down at Lauren through a blur of tears.
You did it.
She wiped the damp hair from Lauren's pale face.
Is he okay?
The doctor answered, He's perfect.
You were a goddess, Angie said. I am so proud of you.
Lauren looked up at Angie through sad, tired eyes.
You'll tell him about me, right? About how I was a good girl who made a mistake, and that I loved him so much I gave him away.
It cut Angie to the quick, that question. Hurt so much that for a heartbeat she couldn't answer. When she did speak, her voice was strained.
I'll tell him all that and more, but he'll know you, Lauren. We won't just say goodbye.
The knowing look in Lauren's eyes made Angie feel like the young one.
Yeah, right. Well, I better get some sleep now. I'm beat.
She turned her face into the pillow.
Do you want to see your baby?
Angie asked gently.
No,
Lauren answered, and there was nothing gentle in her voice at all. I don't want to see him. When Lauren woke up, her room was filled with flowers. If she hadn't felt so terrible, it would have made her smile. From her bed, she tried to match the arrangements to the person. The African violets were definitely from Livy and Sal. The azalea plant was from Maria. The pink carnations were probably from Mira, and the lilies and forget-me-nots were from Angie and Conlon. The 2 dozen red roses were pure David. She wondered what the card said. What did you say to a girl who'd given birth to a baby she couldn't keep? A knock at the door saved her from the direction her thoughts had taken. Come in! The door opened. David and his mother stood there. Both of them looked pale and uncertain. As she looked at the boy she loved, all Lauren could think about was how flat her stomach was now, how empty.
Have you seen him?
David swallowed hard, nodded. He's so small. He crossed the room and came up beside her bed. She waited for his kiss. When it came, it was over too quickly. They stared at each other in a heavy silence.
He has your hair, Mrs. Haynes said, walking to the bed.
She stood by her son, touched his arm as if to steady him.
Please, don't tell me,
Lauren said in a throaty voice. The silence descended again. Lauren looked at David, and just now she felt as if he were miles away.
We won't make it, she thought.
The realization washed over her. She knew suddenly that it had been there all along like a shadow in the night, awaiting sunlight to give it form and substance. They were kids, and now that the pregnancy was past, they would drift toward their separate lives. Oh, they'd try to stay together at their different schools, but in the end, it wouldn't work. They would become what the poets wrote about. First love. Already David was unsure of what to say to her, how to touch her. She was different now, fundamentally changed, and he sensed that.
The flowers are beautiful, Lauren said, reaching for his hand.
When he touched her, she noticed how cold his skin was. David nodded. Mrs. Haynes leaned forward. Very gently, she eased the hair from Lauren's eyes.
You're a very brave girl. I know why my David loves you so much.
1 year ago, that would have meant the world to her. She gazed up at Mrs. Haynes, unable to think of anything to say.
Well, his mother finally said, drawing back, I'll leave you two alone.
She backed away from the bed and left the room. Her heels sounded like gun blasts on the linoleum. The door clicked shut. David leaned down again and kissed Lauren. This second kiss was the real thing.
I signed the papers, he said when he drew back.
She nodded.
It felt weird, just signing him away like that.
Well, we don't have any choice, right?
What else could we do?
He let out a relieved sigh and smiled.
Yeah.
It hurt too much to look at him, so she closed her eyes.
I think I'll go to sleep.
Oh, okay. Mom and I are going school shopping anyway. Do you need anything?
School? She'd forgotten all about that.
No. He kissed her cheek then, touched her face. I'll be back after dinner. She finally looked at him.
Okay.
I love you, he said. It was that, after all of it, that made her cry.
In room 507, Angie sat in a thick wooden rocking chair, waiting. Conlon sat next to her. Every few minutes he looked at his watch, but he didn't say anything.
"She's changed her mind," Angie finally whispered. Someone had to say it.
"We don't know that," he said, but she heard in his voice that he agreed. The clock ticked again and again. The door opened suddenly. A nurse, dressed in orange, stepped into the room. She was holding a small blue-blanketed bundle.
"Mr. and Mrs. Malone?"
"That's us," Conlon said, rising. His voice was strained. The nurse walked over to Angie and gently placed the tiny blue bundle in her arms. Then she left them alone.
He was beautiful, tiny and pink-faced, with his face all scrunched up like a fist.
A few strands of red hair clung damply to his pointed head. His little pink lips looked for something to suck. Angie felt as if she were falling headlong, tumbling. All the love she'd been trying to rein in came flooding out. She kissed his velvet soft cheek, smelled the sweetness of his skin.
"Oh, Con," she whispered, her eyes stinging. "He looks just like Lauren."
"She needs to see him," Conlon said, and though he was right beside her, touching her, his voice sounded far away. Otherwise, he didn't say what they both were thinking. Angie kissed the baby again, stroked his perfect little cheek.
"I'll talk to her."
"I don't know what to feel," Conlon said after a minute. Angie heard the confusion in his voice, the inchoate pain of a loss he feared was coming, and for once, she was the strong one. She looked at him.
"Feel me," she said, touching his hand. "I'm steady. I'm here, and no matter what, we're going to be okay."
Chapter 32. Lauren made it a whole 24 hours without seeing her son. She took no chances at all. Whenever a nurse came into her room, she said, "I'm the birth mother. Talk to the Malones about the baby," before the nurse could say a thing. By the end of the next day, she was feeling good enough to hate being there. The food was terrible, the view sucked, the television hardly got any channels, and worst of all, she could hear the nursery. Every time a baby cried, Lauren had to blink away tears. She tried rereading the USC catalog over and over, but it didn't help. She kept hearing the high-pitched, stuttering newborn wail. Somewhere along the way, she'd started thinking of her baby as Johnny, and she'd sit there, eyes squeezed shut, fists clenched, saying, "Someone take care of Johnny!" She was having a hard time of it, to be sure, but she would have been okay if Angie hadn't visited her last night. Lauren had been asleep, but barely. She'd heard the highway noise outside and tried to pretend it was the ocean, lulling her to sleep.
"Lauren?"
She'd expected a night nurse, someone checking on her one last time before lights out. But it was Angie. She'd looked terrible. Ravaged, almost. Her eyes had been swollen and red, and her attempts at smiling were miserable failures. She'd talked to Lauren for a long time, brushing her hair and bringing her drinks of water until she finally said what she'd come to say.
"You need to see him."
Lauren had looked up into Angie's eyes and thought, there it is. The love Lauren had looked for all of her life.
"I'm afraid."
Angie had touched her then, so gently.
"I know, honey. That's why you need to do it."
Long after Angie had left, Lauren thought about it. In her heart, she knew Angie was right. She needed to hold her son, to kiss his tiny cheek and tell him she loved him. She needed to say goodbye. But she was afraid. It hurt so much to think about leaving him. How would it feel to actually hold him? It was nearing dawn when she made her decision. She leaned sideways and rang the nurse's bell. When the nurse showed up, Lauren said, "Bring me my baby, please."
The next 10 minutes seemed to last forever. Finally, the nurse returned, and Lauren saw her tiny pink-faced son for the first time. He had David's eyes, and her mother's pointed chin, and her own red hair. Here was her whole life in one small face.
"Do you know how to hold him?" the nurse asked. Lauren shook her head. Her throat was too tight for words. The nurse gently positioned the baby in Lauren's arms. She barely noticed when the nurse left. She stared down at this baby of hers, this miracle in her arms, and even though he was so tiny, he seemed like the whole world. Her heart swelled at the sight of him until it actually hurt to breathe. He was her family. Family. All her life she'd been looking for someone who was related to her, and here he was, snuggled in her arms. She'd never known a grandparent, a cousin, an uncle, an aunt, or a sibling, but she had a son. "Johnny," she whispered, touching his tiny fist. He held her finger. She gasped. How could she ever leave him? The thought made her cry. She'd promised, but she hadn't known, hadn't understood. How could she have known how it would feel to love your own child? "I'm not Sarah Decker," she'd said to Angie only a few weeks ago. "I'd never hurt you like that." Lauren squeezed her eyes shut. How could she betray Angie now? Angie, the woman who was waiting and ready to be the best mom Johnny could have, the woman who had shown Lauren what love was, what a family could be. Slowly, she opened her eyes and gazed down at her son through a stinging blur of tears. "But I'm your mommy," she whispered. Some choices, no matter how smart and right, just couldn't be made. David was at her bedside that afternoon. He looked ragged, tired. His smile was faded around the edges. "My mom thinks he looks like her dad," he said after another of their long, awkward silences. Lauren looked up at him. "You're sure about all this, right?" "I'm sure. It's too soon for us." He was right. It was too soon for them. And suddenly she was thinking of all their time together, all the years of loving him. She thought of their times together, the way he always rambled on about car capabilities and talked nonstop through movies, how he sang off key and never seemed to know the words. Mostly, she thought about the way he always seemed to know when she felt scared or lost, and how he held her hand then, tightly, as if he could keep her steady. She'd always love him. "I love you, David," she murmured, hearing the thickness of her voice. "I love you, too." He leaned forward, pulled her into his arms. She was the first to pull back. He took her hand, squeezed it. "This is the end for us." She said it softly. Each word hurt to say out loud. She wanted him to laugh, to take her in his arms and say, "No way." Instead, he started to cry. She felt the burning in her own eyes. She longed to take it back, tell him she hadn't meant it, but she'd grown up now and she knew better. Some dreams simply slipped out of your hands. The worst part was that they might have made it, might have loved each other forever if she hadn't gotten pregnant. She wondered how long it would hurt to love him. She hoped it was a wound that one day healed itself, leaving only the palest silver mark behind. "I want you to go to Stanford and forget about all of this." "I'm sorry," he said, crying so hard she knew he'd take the out she offered. And though that knowledge hurt, it saved her, too, almost made her smile. Some sacrifices had to be made for love. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a small pink piece of paper.
Here, he said, offering it to her.
She frowned. The paper felt whisper-thin between her fingers.
It's the title to your car.
I want you to have it. She could barely see him through her tears.
Oh, David, no.
It's all I have. She would remember this moment for all of her life. No matter what, she would always know that he'd loved her. She handed him the pink slip.
Kiss me, Speed Racer, she whispered,
knowing it would be the last time. The minute Angie passed the nurse's station, she knew.
Mrs. Malone, one of the nurses said, Miss Connolly would like to speak with you.
Angie pulled away from Conlon and ran. Her sandal snapped on the linoleum floor, sounding obscenely loud. She shoved the door open so hard it cracked against the wall. Lauren's bed was empty. She sagged against the doorframe. A part of her had known this was coming, had been waiting for it, but that didn't make it any easier. She's gone, she said when Conlon came up beside her. They stood there in the doorway, holding hands, staring at the perfectly made bed. The scent of flowers lingered in the room. It was the only evidence that last night a girl had been here.
Mrs. Malone?
She turned slowly, expecting to see the plump face of the hospital's chaplain. He was the first person who'd shown up in Angie's room when Sophia died. But it was Ms. Connolly, the woman who'd been appointed guardian ad litem. She left about an hour ago, the woman glanced down, with her son. Angie had expected that, too. Still, the pain came fast and sharp. I see.
She left you a letter, and one for David.
Thank you, she said, taking the envelopes. The guardian said, I'm sorry, and walked away. Angie looked down at the stark white envelope. The name, Angie Malone, was scrawled across the front. Her hands were shaking as she took it, opened it. Dear Angie, I never should have held him. Here she'd scratched something out. All my life I've been looking for a family, and now that I have one, I can't walk out on him. I'm sorry. I wish I were strong enough to tell you this in person, but I can't. I can only pray that someday you and Conlon will forgive me. Just know that somewhere a new mother is going to sleep at night thinking about you, pretending, wishing that she had been your daughter. With love, Lauren. Angie folded up the letter and put it back in the envelope. Then she turned to Conlon. She's out there, all alone. Not alone, he said gently. She knew when she looked in his eyes that he'd expected this all along. Too alone, then. He pulled her into his arms and let her cry. They found David in the waiting room with his mother. At their arrival, David looked up.
Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Malone.
His mother, Anita, smiled. Hello again. An awkward pause fell. They all looked at each other.
He's beautiful, Anita said, her voice cracking only a little.
Angie wondered how it must feel to be saying goodbye to your son's son. Lauren has left the hospital, Angie said as gently as she could. She took the baby with her. We don't... Her throat closed. She couldn't finish.
We don't know where she went, Conlon said.
Anita crumpled into a chair, saying, Oh, God, and covering her mouth with her hand. David frowned. What are you talking about?
She left with her son, Angie said.
Left? But... David's voice broke. Angie handed him the envelope. She left this for you. His hands were unsteady as he opened the letter. They all stood there in silence, watching him. Finally, he looked up, standing there,
crying. He looks so young.
She's not coming back!
It took all of Angie's strength not to cry with him. I don't think she can. It was the first time she dared to say it, even to herself. Conlon squeezed her hand. She thinks we'd all be better off not knowing where she is.
David reached for his mother's hand. What do we do, Mom? She's all alone. It's my fault. I should have stayed with her.
They stood there, looking at one another. No one knew what to say. Finally, Anita said, You'll call us if she comes back.
Of course, Conlon answered.
Angie watched them leave, mother and son, holding hands. She wondered what they'd say to each other now. What words could be found on a day like this? At last, she turned to Conlon, gazed up at him. Their whole life was in his eyes, all the good, the bad, the in-between times. For a while there, it had seemed that love had moved on, left them behind. They'd lost their way because they'd thought their love wasn't enough. Now they knew better. Sometimes your heart got broken, but you just held on. That was all there was.
Let's go home, she said, almost managing to smile.
Yeah, he said. Home. Lauren stepped off the bus and into her old world. She tightened her hold on Johnny, who was sleeping peacefully in the front pack. She rubbed his tiny back. She didn't want him to wake up in this part of town.
You don't belong here, John John. You remember that.
Night was falling now, and in the darkening shadows, the apartment buildings looked less shabby and more sinister. She realized suddenly that she was nervous, almost afraid. This wasn't her neighborhood anymore. She paused, looked back at the bus stop with a longing. If only she could turn around, walk to the corner, and take the bus out to Miracle Mile Road. But there was no going back. She'd known that when she'd left the hospital. Lauren had betrayed Angie and Conlon's trust. She'd done exactly what she'd vowed not to. Whatever love they'd shown her would be gone now. She knew a thing or two about abandonment. Lauren didn't belong across town anymore, in that cottage perched above the sea, or in the restaurant that smelled of thyme and garlic and simmering tomatoes. Her choices in life had led her here again, inexorably, to where she belonged. At last she came to her old apartment building. Looking up at it, she felt a shudder of loss. She'd worked so hard to get out of here. But what else could she afford? She had a newborn son who couldn't be put in child care for months. The $5,000 check in her wallet wasn't nearly enough. She wouldn't stay long, anyway, not in this town that would always make her think of Angie. Only until she felt better. Then she'd go in search of a new place. She set down her small suitcase and straightened, arching her aching back. Everything hurt. The Advil she'd taken earlier had begun to wear off, and her abdomen ached. There was a sharp, pinching pain between her legs. It made her walk like a drunken sailor. With a sigh, she grabbed her suitcase again and walked up the weed-infested walkway, past the black trash bags filled with garbage and the soggy cardboard boxes. The door creaked open easily, still broken. It took her eyes a second to adjust to the gloom. She'd forgotten how dark it was in here, how it smelled of stale cigarettes and despair. She went to apartment 1A and knocked. There was a shuffling of feet, a muffled, "Just a sec." Then the door opened. Mrs. Mock stood there, wearing a floral house dress and fuzzy pink slippers. Her gray hair was hidden by a red bandana that she wore in an old-fashioned style.
Lauren, she said, frowning.
Did my mom ever call for me?
She heard the pathetic neediness in her voice, and it shamed her.
No. You didn't really think she would, did you?
No.
Her voice was barely above a whisper.
I thought you got out.
Lauren tried not to react to the word out, but it wasn't easy.
Maybe there is no out for people like us, Mrs. Mock.
The heavy lines on Mrs. Mock's face seemed to deepen at that.
Who's that?
My son. She smiled, but it felt sad. Johnny.
Mrs. Mock reached out and touched his head. Then she sighed and leaned against the door frame. Lauren recognized the sound. It was defeat. Her mother had sighed like that all the time.
I guess I'm here to see if you have an apartment for rent. I have some money.
We're full up.
Oh.
Lauren refused to give in to despair. She had Johnny to think about now. Her tears would have to be swallowed from now on. She started to turn away.
Maybe you better come in. It's gonna rain. You and Johnny can sleep in the spare bedroom for a night.
Lauren's legs almost buckled. Her relief was so big.
Thank you.
Mrs. Mock led her into the apartment's living, dining room. For a split second, Lauren felt her past and present collide. It looked so much like her old apartment. Same Formica dining set, same shag carpeting. A rose floral sofa was flanked by two blue Lazy Boy recliners. A small black and white television showed an old episode of I Dream of Jeannie. Mrs. Mock went into the kitchen. Lauren sat down on the sofa and eased Johnny out of the pack. He immediately started to cry. She changed his little diaper and rewrapped him, but he wouldn't quit crying. His stuttering shrieks filled the tiny apartment.
Please, Lauren whispered, rubbing his back and rocking him. I know you're not hungry.
It wasn't until Mrs. Mock returned, holding two cups of tea and saying, Are you okay? That Lauren realized she was crying. She wiped her eyes, tried to smile.
I'm just tired, that's all.
Mrs. Mock set the mug on the coffee table and sat in one of the recliners.
He sure is tiny.
He's only 2 days old.
And you're here, looking for your mommy or a place to stay. Oh, Lauren.
Mrs. Mock gave her one of those poor girl looks she knew so well. They stared at each other. Behind them, the sitcom's laugh track roared.
What are you going to do?
Lauren looked down at Johnny.
I don't know. I was all set to give him up for adoption, but I couldn't do it.
I can see how much you love him, Mrs. Mock said, her voice softening. And the father?
I love him, too. That's why I'm here.
All alone.
Lauren looked up. She felt her mouth tremble and tears fill her eyes. Again.
I'm sorry. It's the hormones. I cry all the time.
Where have you been, Lauren?
What do you mean?
I remember the woman who came for you that day. I stood at my kitchen window and watched you get into her car and drive away, and I thought, good for you, Lauren Ribido.
Angie Malone.
It hurt to say her name.
I know I'm just an old woman who sits at home all day talking to her cats and watching reruns, but it looked like she loved you.
I ruined that.
How?
I promised her the baby, and then I ran in the middle of the night. She'll hate me now.
So you didn't talk to her about it? You just ran off?
I couldn't face her.
Mrs. Mock leaned back in her chair, studying Lauren through narrowed eyes. Finally, she said,
Close your eyes.
But
do it.
Lauren did as she was told.
I want you to picture your mother.
She formed the image in her mind. Mom, platinum-haired, her once beautiful face beginning to tighten and go thin. She was sprawled on the broken-down sofa, wearing a frayed denim miniskirt and a cropped T-shirt. There was a cigarette in her right hand. Smoke spiraled up from it.
Okay.
That's what running away does to a woman.
Lauren slowly opened her eyes and looked at Mrs. Mock.
I watched you bust your ass for a chance in life, Lauren.
You carried home backpacks full of books and worked two jobs and got yourself a scholarship to Fircrest. You came up with the rent when your loser mother spent it all at the Tides. I had hope for you, Lauren. Do you know how rare that is in this building?
Hope. Lauren closed her eyes again, this time picturing Angie. She saw her standing on the porch, looking out to sea, with her dark hair fluttering in the breeze. Angie turned, saw Lauren, and smiled. There you are. How did you sleep? It was a nothing little memory, just an image of an ordinary day.
You have some place to go, don't you? Mrs. Mock said.
I'm afraid.
That's no way to go through life, Lauren. Trust me on this. I know where the road ends if it starts with fear. You know where it ends, too. In an apartment upstairs and a mound of unpaid bills.
What if she can't forgive me?
Come on, Lauren. You're smarter than that, Mrs. Mock said. What if she can?
You're a reporter, damn it. Find her.
Angie, we've had this conversation a dozen times. I don't even know where to start. David spoke to all of her friends. No one has heard from her. The guy at the bus station doesn't remember selling her a ticket. Her old apartment has been re-rented. The landlady practically hung up on me when I asked about Lauren. The admissions director at USC said she canceled her scholarship. I have no idea where she'd go.
Angie hit the button on the food processor. The whirring sound filled the kitchen. She stared down into the batter, trying to think of something new to say. There was nothing. In the past 24 hours, she and Conlon had said everything that could be said on the subject. Lauren had simply vanished. It was difficult to do in this busy, overcrowded world. Angie unlocked the bowl and poured the batter over the blueberry mixture. Her sisters swore that cooking was therapeutic. This was her third blueberry cobbler. Any more therapy, and she'd probably scream. He came up behind her, put his arm around her, and kissed the curve of her neck. She sighed and leaned back against him. I can't stand the thought of her alone. And don't tell me she's not alone. She's a kid. She needs someone to take care of her.
She's a mother now, he said gently. The kid part gets lost in all that.
She turned into his arms, put her hands on his chest. His heart beat beneath her palm, nice and steady and even. Whenever in the past few hours she'd felt dizzy or lost or unsteady, she'd gone to him, touched him, and let him be her anchor. He kissed her. With his lips against hers, he whispered, "She knows you love her. She'll be back." Angie could hear in his voice how much he wanted to believe that.
No, she said. She won't be back. You know why?
Why? She's going to think I could never forgive her. Her mother didn't teach her the things that matter. She doesn't realize she's forgiven her mom, or would the second she showed up. She doesn't know how durable love can be, only how easily it gets broken.
You know what's amazing?
You never mentioned the baby.
A part of me knew she couldn't do it. She sighed. I wish I'd told her that.
Maybe then she wouldn't have run off in the middle of the night.
You told her what really mattered.
And she heard you, I guarantee it.
I don't think so, Con.
I know so. When she had the baby, you told Lauren you loved her and you were proud of her. Someday, when she stops hating herself for what she had to do, she'll remember that, and she'll be back. Maybe her mother didn't teach her about love, but you did. Sooner or later, she'll figure that out.
He could always do it. Say just the right thing she needed to hear.
Have I told you how much I love you, Conlon Malone?
You've told me.
He glanced over at the oven.
How long does that thing bake?
She wanted to smile.
50 minutes.
That's definitely enough time to show me.
Maybe even twice.
Angie kissed her sleeping husband and rolled out of bed,
careful not to disturb him. Dressing quietly in gray sweats, she left the room. It was so quiet downstairs. She'd forgotten that, the silence. A teenager made so much noise.
"Where are you?" she whispered out loud, hugging herself.
The world out there was so damn big, and Lauren was so young. A dozen bad ends came to her, flashed through her mind like images in a horror film. She headed toward the kitchen for a cup of coffee. She was halfway there when she saw the box. It was in the hallway, tucked in close to the wall. Conlon must have got it out of the laundry room yesterday morning before they'd gone to the hospital. Yesterday, when everything had been different. She knew she should turn away from it, pretend she hadn't seen it, but that was the way of her former self, and no good came of not looking. She went to the box, knelt beside it, and opened it up. The Winnie the Pooh lamp lay on top, cradled in a pink cotton blanket. Angie pulled it out, held it. The amazing thing was that she didn't cry, didn't ache for the lost baby for whom this lamp had been bought. Instead, she carried it to the kitchen and set it on the table. "There," she said, "it's waiting for you, Lauren. Come home and pick it up." Her only answer was silence. Now and then the old house creaked, and in the distance the ocean grumbled and whooshed, but here in this house that had gone from 3 to 2, it was still. She walked out to the porch, stared down at the ocean. She was so intent on the water that it took her a moment to see the girl standing in the trees. Angie ran down the steps and across the wet grass, almost falling twice. Lauren stood there, unsmiling, her eyes swollen and red. She tried to smile, failed. Angie wanted to throw her arms around Lauren, but something stopped her. There was a look in the girl's eyes that was harrowing. Her mouth trembled. "We were so worried about you," Angie said, moving a step closer. Lauren looked down at the baby in her arms. "I know I promised him to you. I just..." She looked up. Tears filled her eyes. "Oh, Lauren." At last, she closed the gap between them. She touched Lauren's damp cheek in the gentle kind of caress she dared so easily in the past. "I should have told you more about what it was like. It's just, it was so hard to think about the day I had Sophie, the few minutes I held her. I knew when you looked into your baby's eyes, you'd be as lost as I was. That's why I never decorated the nursery. I knew, honey." "You knew I'd keep him?" "I was pretty sure." Lauren's face crumpled just a little. Her lips trembled and curved downward. "But you stayed with me. I thought..." "It was you, Lauren." "Don't you know that? You're part of our family. We love you." Lauren's eyes widened. "Even after how I hurt you?" "Love bangs us up a bit in this life, Lauren, but it doesn't go away." Lauren stared up at her. "When I was little, I used to have a dream, the same one every night. I was in a red dress, and a woman was there, reaching down to hold my hand. She always said, 'Come on, Lauren, we don't want to be late.' When I woke up, I was always crying."
"Why were you crying?"
"Because she was the mom I couldn't have." Angie drew in a sharp breath, then released it on a ragged sigh. Something inside of her gave way. She hadn't realized how tightly she'd been wrapped until the pressure eased. This was what they'd come together for, she and Lauren. This one perfect moment. She reached out for Lauren's hand, said gently, "You have me, Lauren." Tears streaked down Lauren's face. "Oh, Angie," she said, "I'm so sorry." Angie pulled her into her arms. "There's nothing to be sorry about."
"Thank you, Angie," she said in a quiet voice, drawing back.
Angie's face softened into a smile.
"No, thank you."
"For being nothing but trouble and keeping you up at night?"
Angie touched her cheek gently. For showing me how it feels to be a mother. A grandmother. All of those empty years I dreamed of my little girl on a merry-go-round. I didn't know. Didn't know what? That my daughter was already too old for playgrounds. Lauren looked up at her then. It was all in her eyes, the years spent in quiet desperation, standing at her window, dreaming of a mother who loved her, or lying in her bed, longing for a bedtime story and a good night kiss. I was waiting for you, too. Angie felt her smile shake. She reinforced it, wiped her eyes. And who is this barnacle on your chest? John Henry. Lauren eased the baby out of the front pack and offered him to Angie. She took him, held him in her arms. He's perfect, she whispered, feeling a heady combination of love and awe. Nothing filled a woman's arms like a baby. She kissed his soft forehead, inhaled the baby sweet scent of him. What do I do now? Lauren asked in a quiet voice.
You tell me. What do you want to do?
I want to go to college. I guess it'll have to be community college for now. Maybe if I work for a few months and really save up, I'll be able to take classes in the spring. It wasn't what I dreamed of, but things change. Even that will be hard, Angie said gently. Harder still would be watching all her friends and David go off to college in the fall. I'm used to hard. If I could have my job back, would it help if you had a place to live? Lauren gasped. It was a sharp, brittle sound, as if she'd just washed ashore. Really? Of course, really. We wouldn't have to stay for long, just until I had enough money for an apartment and daycare. Don't you understand yet, Lauren? You don't need daycare. You're part of a loud, loving, opinionated family now. Johnny won't be the first baby to grow up in the restaurant, and he won't be the last. She grinned. And as you might imagine, I could find time to babysit. Like every day.
You'd do that?
Angie gazed down at Lauren sadly. The girl looked so young right now. Her eyes were full of a hope that seemed brand new. Angie pulled her into a fierce hug. For a heartbeat, she couldn't let go. Finally, she took a deep breath and stepped back. You're back just in time. Today is Aunt Julia's birthday. I've made 3 blueberry cobblers, which no one except you and Conlon will eat. She reached out for Lauren.
Come on, she whispered. We don't want to be late.
Lauren swallowed hard. A quivering smile curved her lips even as she started again to cry. I love you, Angie.
I know that, honey. It hurts like hell sometimes, doesn't it?
Together, hand in hand, they walked across the wet grass and went into the house. Lauren immediately went to the stereo and turned on the music. It was still set to her favorite station. An old Aerosmith song pulsed through the speakers, rocked the house with sound. She turned it down quickly, but not fast enough. Conlon came thundering down the stairs, stumbled into the living room. What the hell's the racket? Lauren froze, looked up at him. Her smile slipped. Hey, Conlon, He ran across the room and pulled her into his arms. He twirled her around until both of them were laughing. It's about time, he said. She's back, Angie said, patting the baby gently, smiling at the noise. She looked over at the Winnie the Pooh lamp on the counter. At last it would light a baby's room. Our girls come home.
Thank you for listening to Another Life by Kristen Hanna, read by Susan Erickson. First published in 2004 by Ballantine Books, an imprint of the Random House Publishing Group, a division of Random House Incorporated, New York. Published in the UK by Macmillan, an imprint of Pan Macmillan, a division of Macmillan Publishers International Limited. Text copyright Kristen Hanna, 2004. Recording copyright, Brilliance Audio, 2004. Directed by Laura Grafton. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.